Welcome back to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. Anxiety. We all get worries. We all have anxiety from time to time. But what happens when that anxiety becomes excessive, persistent, and unreasonable, where you have issues of trying to sleep or chronic fatigue or so much stress that you can never just sort of just relax and it's just wearing you down and it's become an impairment to your daily life? What happens when you have generalized anxiety disorder? So many people have this, yet they don't get treatment for it. It's connected to trauma. It's connected to just so many pressures that we have day to day. What can we do about that? Give us a call if you feel this is talking to you. How do you deal with anxiety in your life? The number is 210-614-8980. We're joined by Dr. Melissa Martinez. She's the Associate Professor of Psychiatry at the UT Health San Antonio. Bob Gilliam is a Community Coordinator of Spiritual Services at Haven for Hope. And Melissa Tejerina is the Vice President for Child Behavioral Health at the Center for Healthcare Services. Bo, welcome to all of y'all. It's great to have you here. So Dr. Melissa Martinez, can you talk about anxiety? When does anxiety become an issue?
So you did a great job of introducing it. What we try to do is distinguish between what is normal or expected anxiety from what would be considered a disorder or an illness. So all of us have times when we get anxious, when it's appropriate to get anxious, when we're coming on a radio show or when we're getting ready to give a lecture or a presentation. However, for people with generalized anxiety disorder, they feel this way all the time. They feel anxious more days than not. The anxiety is so debilitating that it interferes with their ability to go to work sometimes. It interferes with their ability to maintain friendships or to develop new friendships and pursue new opportunities. Some of the symptoms that go along with it, in addition to feeling anxious or worried all the time, are people can sometimes have their muscles be tense all the time, or the anxiety can make them tired or interfere with their ability to sleep. It can also contribute to irritability, which makes it even more difficult to get along with others. So when people's anxiety gets to this degree, when it causes them significant distress and impairs their ability to function, that's when it's important for them to talk about it with their primary care doctors or with any help that's available and around them, and to seek treatment. Because while more than 40 million Americans struggle with anxiety, less than 40% get treatment, which is unfortunate because actually anxiety disorder responds well to treatment. More than 50% of people will get better with medication and or therapy. And so if someone is struggling with these symptoms, it would be really important and helpful for them to go seek help from their physician or from a mental health professional, because the illness is definitely treatable.
So how do you go from being someone who has daily anxiety, just dealing with day-to-day life? People have issues just getting into a car sometimes. Driving anxiety is a real thing. And then it just kind of grows from there. And then what do you have, like panic attacks? And that becomes something that becomes a problem. Melissa Tejerina, you're the Vice President of Child Behavioral Health at the Center for Healthcare Services. Is this something that's affecting children as well?
Yes. Anxiety disorders are the most common disorder among adults and children, but about 1 in 4 children live with a generalized anxiety disorder. And so for children, what it may look like is they may, when they're in school, find themselves in the nurse's office a lot with a stomach ache or feeling a headache or feeling dizzy. Parents may report it as they take them out into the community to do activities that would be fun, but they act out while they're there, or they don't want to go, or they don't want to get out of the car, and it's just very difficult to take them anywhere. And so those might be some of the early signs that we see with children. The median age for onset for anxiety disorders is 11, so we know that lots of folks younger than 11 are experiencing that, again, because of trauma experience or because of other factors that contribute to anxiety disorders.
Bo Gilliam, we're at the Haven for Hope. You're a community coordinator for spiritual services, and you're also a person who has lived with anxiety disorders.
Yes, I have, and you speak about acting out. I can remember when I was a child of 7 or 8 years old and going to a baseball game and getting thrown out of the game and then going out in the outfield and just becoming a nuisance out there and continuing because of this thing that was going on inside my body that I didn't understand. But now it's a process where I've learned coping skills. I've learned my breathing. It needs to slow down. My whole thought process needs to just refocus so that I can get control over myself when these panic attacks, if you will, come over me.
We have to learn resilience. Is that something that many people, when we try to establish why some people are able to cope with anxiety and other people are not, and say, well, is it, and there's some inability for many who have no idea what's going on, who say, it's just nerves, get over it. How do we explain to them that it's not just that, that this is an actual medical concern? Doctor?
So what you're bringing up is an excellent point because anxiety disorders are genetic to some degree and heritable. And so this is something that people can inherit from their family. In addition to that, people can just be born with a temperament, a way of being, where they are more anxious than other people. All of us are unique. All of us are wired differently. And some of us are wired to be more anxious than others. And so it's important to listen to the people around you. And if somebody says that they're anxious or they're overly anxious, to kind of take a stance of what I would call curiosity and learn more about it, learn about their experience, and then help them with some basic techniques. You can start by helping them learn some relaxation skills, some breathing techniques. There's a skill called mindfulness, which really kind of helps anchor people and gets them in the present moment so the anxiety doesn't take over and overwhelm them. And then, of course, in addition to learning these techniques, they can be referred to a provider for medication management or therapy to help them move beyond being overwhelmed by their anxiety or nervousness.
Let's go to a caller. This is Stitch. The number is 210-614-8980. If you'd like to join our conversation as we talk about anxiety. Stitch, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Dave, thank you for taking my call. Matter of fact, this conversation came on right at the peak of my day. I suffer from anxiety so bad, OCD, ADD. I just finally got health insurance, and I'm actually in the process of trying to find someone to level out my medication. And when people say, just get over it, let me put it to you this way. As soon as I got up this morning, my earring fell in the toilet, literally fell in the toilet, and it just destroyed my morning for some reason. And these little bitty things that I try to get over, it is so hard. It is so hard. I'm 36 years old. I have been in abusive relationships with my fiance, girlfriends. I grew up in a very hostile environment as a kid, seeing my stepdad beat my mother and everything. And I have always been in and out of hospitals. And it's gotten to the point to where it's so bad now, it's affecting my writing, and it's been affecting my writing for my music the past 2.5 years. I am literally at wit's end, and every time I call to get somewhere, and I have health insurance, I hardly get a return call. Oh, we'll call you back.
Okay, so Stitch apparently is just trying to find some ability to get help, and he's not able to connect with a provider. Melissa Tejerina, you're at the Center for Healthcare Services. What's out there for someone like Stitch?
So there are a couple of numbers that he could call to connect for services as an adult. One of those is a CenterCare clinic, and that number is 210-261-1500. And then the other is our general intake number, which is 210-261-1250. And he would be able to speak with someone, schedule an appointment to come in and meet with either a therapist or a psychiatrist or even an intake person to see what kind of services he would be best suited for.
Here's another caller. Anita is on the line. Anita, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Thank you so much for taking my call. I just had a quick question. My son gets anxious because of all of the recent police shootings of minority children or teens, and it seems unrealistic. I don't think it's going to happen to him, but it doesn't sound like it reaches the level of the anxiety disorder that you're discussing. So I'm wondering if there's some natural things that we can do to help him. Like, I've heard essential oils can be helpful, like, but I don't know if that's just hype or if that's actually helpful.
Anita, thank you for that call. Again, Melissa Tejadina, since you're with the Child Behavioral Health at the Center for Healthcare Services. And we're hearing also that many Latino children are feeling a heightened anxiety because of the higher level of deportations in the community.
So as we've talked about earlier, there's a lot of different risk factors for developing an anxiety disorder, but we do know trauma and trauma exposure is part of that. So our young people today have greater access than ever to news as it's happening through the internet, through social media. And so someone who already has a predisposition for an anxiety disorder and then is exposed to all of this additional information may very well have struggles managing their anxiety. So some of the self-help things are what we've talked about, mindfulness kinds of activities, things like yoga, relaxation exercises, learning how to manage your breathing. But more importantly, really starting to keep track of when are those times that you're feeling anxious. Is it all the time? Are there certain situations that seem to bring this on? And I would say if that's going on a regular basis, it does warrant speaking to a professional just to explore it further. And treatment can be short term. It doesn't mean just because you seek treatment, you'll be in treatment forever.
And Bo?
One of the things that I found out about anxiety is the acronym FEAR. There's a sense of fear in anxiety. And fear to me is false expectations that appear real. The sense of doom of the shootings and of things happening bad around us because of the news and because of the ever-present current of the events coming at us present a false expectation that we now take to be real. And what I would suggest is to sit down with your child and explain to him, hey, there may be one shooting today, but there's 99 things that happened that are good today as well. And have that conversation back and forth. Let him vent, and you also reflect on what he has vented in a very positive manner. And I think this could help allow him to go through and progress with this anxiety.
So Dr. Melissa Martinez, that seems like a cognitive way of trying to deal mm-hmm. with these situations, but many of these fears are emotionally based, and I'm wondering if they can be reasoned out just as simply as Bo talked about.
So cognitive therapy that you, like you mentioned, is actually does what Bo was mentioning. It takes some of people's what we call cognitive distortions, inaccurate or unrealistic thoughts, and looks at the evidence for and against it and tries to get people to take a more objective perspective. And the theory behind cognitive behavioral therapy is that our thoughts and behaviors can affect our emotions. And so if we change our thoughts and behaviors, it can change our emotions. And so that is how, that is the method or the theory for why they feel that that therapy is effective. In addition to cognitive therapy, because sometimes therapy doesn't take care of everything, people can add medication to help turn down the volume on their anxiety. So the medication is often used, like I said, to turn down the volume on the anxiety, medications like antidepressants. In very rare circumstances, we can use medications called benzodiazepines for short-term treatment, but we're very cautious with those. We tend to focus mostly on using antidepressants. So we use the medications to help turn down the volume of the anxiety so people are better able to work on their thinking, on their thought processes, and on their behaviors in the therapy. The combination of the two is the most effective treatment.
We're going to continue talking about anxiety. What are some treatment solutions? What are some healthy self-soothing habits that people can develop? What's your story about dealing with anxiety? What is normal versus excessive worry? How does this impact people's physical health? Give us a call. The number is 210-614-8980. 210-614-8980. The source continues after this break. You're listening to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. We're talking about a subject that could give you the heebie-jeebies. We're talking about anxiety, but when does just normal day-to-day worry, things about, you know, you've got a deadline, you've got to meet payroll, you got all sorts of things, all these things kind of like amp you up. But once you finally get that task achieved, then you go back to just feeling your normal, relaxed self. But what if you never get back to that normal, relaxed self and you're always in that heightened state of arousal, dealing with all sorts of pressure and stimuli? How do you bring yourself down? What happens if you can't bring yourself down? People say then you're living with an anxiety disorder. GAD, they call that, a generalized anxiety disorder, which you deal with excessive, persistent, unreasonable anxiety. We're talking about that this afternoon. What are some simple ways to maybe bring you down, give you some relaxation techniques, some coping mechanisms, how to recognize that, and how to ask for help? Give us a call. The number is 210-614-8980. And let's go to the phones. And we've got Verna on the line. And Verna is on the air. Verna, you're with Nambi San Antonio. You're on the air.
Yes, thank you. Good morning or good afternoon, everybody. I just wanted to let everybody know about the National Alliance on Mental Illness. We offer support for people who have a diagnosis. We have free classes. We also have support groups. And we have it also for the family members because it affects the family members just with watching their loved ones with anxiety. So we say education, education, education. So I just want to let everybody know that we're out here. Our website is NAMI-SAT.org. Our phone number is 210-734-3349. And so just call. You can register. All our classes and support groups are free. And, again, I'm talking as for family members that your loved ones have anxiety. Educate yourself so you know how to communicate with them. I'm going to turn this over to Melissa Riley. She handles the education part for people that have diagnoses. Here she is.
Hi, I'm Melissa. I'm a program coordinator here at NAMI, and we also offer a course called Peer-to-Peer. And it's for those living with a diagnosis or just having mental difficulties. It doesn't have to be a formal diagnosis. We work with people who have anxiety or a variety of mental illness. They get together in a class. It's not a support group, but it is a class where you form a community of support, and we talk about mental illness and medication and how to better manage your triggers. And it also helps when everyone is transparent because that helps reduce the stigma. And anyone can call and find out about those classes and sign up for those classes at 210-734-3349. And so it is important to talk about anxiety. And I think it helps actually to reduce anxiety when you're around other people and can talk about your condition.
All right. Well, thank you so much for calling and letting us know about that. Bo Gilliam, he's a community coordinator for spiritual services at Haven for Hope. And you see a lot of individuals at the campus at Haven for Hope, Bo, who are dealing with different types of trauma. They're dealing with different levels of anxiety. What do you tell them?
Well, just to speak to NAMI and that situation, we have people that have learned and went through the peer-to-peer and peer-to-family experience and now are teaching, facilitating the classes. And so it's a progressive way of dealing with anxiety as you learn your healing and then you pass it on. So what I see and what I experience at the base level of when a new family comes in or a new child comes in, is to give them a safe space. Let them feel safe, first and foremost, and allow a relationship of trust. And once we can get a safe space and an inkling of trust, we can build upon that. And I've seen this time and time again as these children that are traumatized, the mothers are traumatized, and if we can get that safe space within the first couple of days, then brick upon brick of trust, of mercy, and of kindness that will lead to the compassionate journey that we are on together with them so that we're there only to give them what they want, not what we want to give them, but what they want.
Melissa Tejadina, you raised a child who had an anxiety disorder. That's. Can you talk about that? And maybe what can parents, what can they do?
Sure. So my child is now a young adult. He actually has gone through the NAMI classes and goes out and tells his story to other folks about what getting treatment meant for him. And we were able to get treatment for him very early, which was a good thing. I think it's made a difference in him being able to manage his anxiety. He also has a co-occurring mood disorder, which is very common. It's a lot of people have just anxiety disorders. Many folks have mood disorders and anxiety disorders together, which can make treatment even more challenging. For him, I think it was about really trying what Bo was saying, trying to make sure that he could feel safe, figuring out how to work with the schools, identifying people that when he was in distress could help him establish that feeling of safety. You know, for parents, it's hard because you know your child is safe, but they don't feel safe. And there is a difference between being safe and feeling safe. And so he was one of those frequent flyers that was often in the nurse's office complaining of aches and pains. And it really was this anxiety that was going undertreated. We had a wonderful psychiatrist that we worked with at UT Health Science Center who was able to work with his treatment, help him go through the steps of being able to do that. We also connected him to a therapist so that he could do cognitive behavioral therapy to learn how his thoughts and feelings were impacting his behaviors. As a young adult, he learned other strategies that he could do. When he was living in his own apartment, he found it very anxiety-provoking to go shop for groceries. So he took advantage of the opportunity to do online shopping now, which is another way not just to manage your anxiety. You still want to learn how to manage the illness. But there are strategies that you can use that help you get through the day-to-day while you're learning how to do that. He used to have a hard time going to the movies just to see something for enjoyment because he felt like people would be staring at him. Well, now you can go online, buy the movie ticket, sit at the back of the theater if you want. So it's a way to be able to use the things that are out there to come up with what works for you. And I think that that's what individuals and families have to do is figure out what works for them.
Here's another caller. Ashley's on the line. Ashley, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi. So I was diagnosed with depression and anxiety when I was 16. And through that, I've started to go to school, getting my bachelor's in psychology. Sorry. And I've developed dermatomania from my anxiety. And what really helps me is just like self-care, like taking time and not stressing yourself out too much, like. For school, I've decreased my hours in school because school is a really big trigger for me. And also, like, taking time and just doing what I want instead of worrying about what everyone else wants me to do, because that's a really big problem that I have.
And how are things going for you?
Everything's going really well, actually. I got into, I had some trauma occur last year in May. And I've come out of it a lot stronger than I thought I ever would have, to be quite honest.
So what do you recommend?
I honestly recommend mindfulness. I have a really big problem of worrying about the future and worrying about what's going to happen and all the what ifs in life. And just taking the time to, like, think about, because your mind spins things out of control.
All right, Ashley. Ashley, thank you for that. We got cut off for a second, but you're back. But I want to thank you for your call. Dr. Melissa Martinez, how important is the phrase, I forgive you, in dealing with anxiety, talking to yourself, forgiving yourself for things that may have happened so long ago that no one remembers them, only you, but yet you hang on to these things and they haunt you. But you just got to say, I forgive you, I forgive you, I forgive me.
I think that's a very important point. At the end of the day, we all have to remember that we're human and that we're different. And something that may bother me may not bother my friend. And it would be important for me to remember that I'm wired, like Ashley, I think our last caller was saying, I'm wired differently from other people. And it's important to learn what my triggers are and what affects me and how I would respond to something, because that's different from somebody else. And to realize that I'm not better or worse, I'm just different. And so then it would be important for me to forgive myself for overreacting or underreacting to something because of how I'm wired or how I've set up my thinking, and then to continue addressing it to help make myself better able to cope with the environment and circumstances around me, because something that is constant is change, and it's important for people to have skills to navigate life, which can be challenging at times with all the change. So the ability to forgive yourself is an extremely important one, and to be understanding and compassionate with yourself is also very important.
So what is normal versus excessive when we talk about anxiety?
So it's normal and expectable for someone to feel anxious before a big exam, to feel anxious before a big presentation, to feel anxious before a job interview, to feel anxious before getting their driver's license. These are situations where we would all experience anxiety because that's how we're biologically wired. We're biologically wired to be anxious when there's something new in our environment because it makes us alert to possible danger. But when it starts happening most of the day, nearly every day, and interferes with your ability to function or causes you significant distress, then that's when we say, okay, wait, let's take a step out, let's take a look at this, and let's talk with somebody about it because maybe this is something that warrants help. One of the difficulties is that somebody who's living with anxiety may not realize that what they're feeling is excessive. And so something to look at is, how am I functioning with this feeling? Is it something that bothers me every day? Is it all day? Is it keeping me in bed instead of having me go meet people to enjoy dinner? Is it keeping me in bed instead of pursuing a job opportunity? So looking at how you're functioning would help you figure out what's
so successful. Coming back from the break, we're going to talk more, hear more from our listeners who are online. We'll also talk about some techniques that people can develop to give them some resiliency, maybe to help them cope with the day-to-day anxiety. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. This is The Source from Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. We can't keep treating anxiety with the same way maybe drinking too much, smoking too much, doing other things that are harmful behavior, maybe distracting yourself from things that are bothering you. We've got to find some healthy ways to confront anxiety, depower it, recompile your life in a way that you can face these issues and put them in context. We're talking about anxiety in our life. The number to call in is 210-614-8980. Maya is on the line. Maya, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hey there. One thing that I've noticed throughout this entire discussion that I just wanted to address is that there's really, the stigma around anxiety. I remember, personally, I've suffered from anxiety, and I remember my mom saying, well, maybe we should try a therapist and talk about this, and we're like, I don't want to go to therapy. And I think often as a society, we're treating anxiety as something that's fundamentally wrong with a person rather than something that's natural. So, there's this stigma around going to therapy where it's, oh, well, something's wrong with me and I need to be fixed, whereas we need to be looking at it as, okay, maybe I need a little help, but this is a normal thing. Everyone goes through it. So I'd just like to hear some of your comments on kind of the stigma, because I know there's a big movement right now raising awareness of mental health. So we talk about anxiety a lot, but we don't really talk about the stigma.
All right. Thank you for that call, Maya. And so, Bo, is there a big stigma issue here?
Oh, there's no question about it. There's a sense of shame of the individual that he doesn't feel that he's up to par with other people, and he doesn't see eye to eye with other people. Yeah, the stigma is real. And what I would tell you is the difference between illness and wellness is one has an I and another one has a W-E, and they're spelled mostly the same. And if we can get a support system around us just to talk, just to be present with, and spend the time on a regular basis with that support system, whether it be a friend, a neighbor, a pastor, anybody that you felt safe with, that this could help you understand that, hey, some people it's very engaging and debilitating, and other people it's a sense of just moving through it and progressing to a better processing point.
All right, here's more callers. Sally. Hey, Sally, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi, thanks for having me on. So I am a social worker, and I have anxiety myself, and it's a pretty high burnout field. And so one thing that I have learned and something that I try to teach the clients that I serve is that self-care is hard. self-care takes discipline. It's easy to say things like, I'm just going to go grab myself something like fast food or something like that to help myself feel better for a minute. But trying to do things like exercise, eat well at home, you know, preparing meals for yourself, sleeping, going to therapy and things like that, the more unpleasant tasks sometimes take even more discipline than just going for the easy fix. So I would encourage people to think about what makes them happy, you know, long term, not just what's going to make you feel better in that moment, and then try to go from there.
All right. And there's Lori. Lori, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi. Thank you. Yes. And I want to say NAMI and the Center for Healthcare Services are wonderful. They really support people. That peer-to-peer is an awesome way to get past things. I'm a massage therapist. And I've also had mental health, and I just want to encourage people that self-time massage therapy is very helpful. It's beneficial. And then another lady on the phone was asking about essential oils, and I would say that lavender is a safe essential oil for children, and you can put it on their pillow. They even have the stuffed animals that have the lavender, and just caressing their hair is very calming. So I just wanted to put that out there.
Those are very good clients. Soothing techniques. Parents can engage in with their child. So Melissa, as you raised a child with anxiety disorder, physical comforting, is that a big thing that you can bring to helping the child?
I think it can be. I think having those routines, having things that help them feel better, the lavender suggestion's a great one. I think the other thing in general is everybody should have some activity that they just love to do, whatever that is. For my child, he participated in chess. He found that to be something he could really get all of his thoughts engaged into, and it would allow him to not be in distress. But whether that's playing soccer, whether that's going for a walk in the park, whatever it is, I think parents should help their children find what is that one or two things that they can do that they really find joy in that builds their self-esteem, helps them connect to others in a way that feels comfortable to them. Because it is kind of going back to what Dr. Martinez was saying, the difference between what's situational anxiety and what's living with this day in and day out is if it's interfering in your ability to live, to love, or to laugh, then that's not typical. And you want to be able to get to a place where you can experience life to its fullest.
And Dr. Martinez, if you have a great relationship with someone in your life, a partner in life, having that person, can they be provide the cuddling and soothing? Is that something that helps?
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. Having a partner or even friends who are supportive and can provide you with positive feedback and can also help check you on some of your illogical thoughts or inaccurate thoughts can be very helpful for people. So like Beau was saying and like Melissa was saying, having a support network and building that support network can be very helpful.
Let's go back to the phones. This is Rosalind. Rosalind, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Thank you, David Martin Davies. I am a grandmother who has two granddaughters that suffer from anxiety. And my husband has for 50 years suffered from insomnia. And we have found a really inexpensive, go to the local drugstore and pick up those motion sickness wristbands that you wear to go on a cruise or to go driving that handle motion sickness and morning sickness. And they seem to be really good for anxiety as well as insomnia. My husband went from sleeping about 3 interrupted hours a night. Now he sleeps about 7 hours a night.
All right. Great tip. Thank you. I'm going to go to another caller really quick. We got a lot of calls. Natasha, welcome to The Source. Natasha, you're on the air.
Oh, first of all, thank you so much for having me on your show. I've always wanted to call in. I'm so chuffed. I wanted someone to talk about situational anxiety, where somehow there's a confluence of events and you start to develop a hypervigilance. Sometimes it happens to like professionals in high stress situations, and then it can easily transition into generalized GAD. And I think that there's a lot of value in speaking about recognizing the symptoms of anxiety, no matter how mild, and then addressing them immediately before they progress, because I feel like mental illness, just like any other medical illness, really is on a continuum and can progress and become worse.
All right, so there's a lot there. Let me go to that last thing she brought up, how it can accumulate and get worse. And when you feel like you may just have sort of generalized anxiety in your life, does it become something grow more severe where you do have a panic disorder or a social phobia that does become something that can cripple your life? Does it grow like that, Dr. Melissa Martinez?
So anxiety can actually shift, and it can come and go over time. So there are times in people's lives where it can become stronger and felt more, and then there are times when it will decrease. One of the concerns with people who struggle with anxiety is that they will often turn to substances to help decrease their anxiety. And so their anxiety will contribute to the development of a substance use disorder, to the development of an alcohol use disorder, or the development of a prescription drug use disorder. So in that way, anxiety can grow and add to the different difficulties that people struggle with. And, you know, with anything almost, and I'll go with the saying, an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure. So the sooner that you address something, the sooner that you get on an issue that you're struggling with, then the better able that you are to cope with it, rather than letting it get out of hand and snowball.
So if a person has triggers in their life and their reaction is, I can't wait to get home to hit that bottle, is that a red flag that you've got to deal with that?
That would be a huge red flag for someone to talk with a friend, or to talk with a clergy member, or to talk with a support person around them, or even to head to their nearest professional and get some input on what's going on.
So Bo at the Haven for Hope, this is a facility, the campus has been set up to help people who are dealing with homelessness. And these are people who many times have issues of anxiety that keep them from functioning and keeping a job. Is that what you see?
Yes, I do. And I see that we have a program that deals with the clinical side. We have peer supports that have the lived experience of overcoming the anxiety or whatever co-occurring illness that they may have had. And we have the home visits when people move out of Haven. So we continue to build this safe net around them and let them know that we care and we want to help them and we're there for them, no matter what the relapse may be, whatever the circumstances may be, that we're there for them.
So you see people actually take control of their inner life and be able to establish stability and routine and be able to get a job and get an apartment and have some safety and stability and happiness.
We have such a success rate at Haven because we have used the person-centered plan, where the individual tells us what they want to do, what their goals are, what their orientation is, and we move accordingly.
So goals, assessing goals, working yourself towards these things, tracking your life, tracking how you feel on a day-to-day basis, figuring out how you can live with anxiety. It's not going to go away, but you can live with it in a successful manner. Is that right, doctor? Really quick.
You definitely can, and there are plenty of places to get treatment. UT Health, Center for Healthcare Services, and it sounds like Haven for Hope has some wonderful resources as well.
All right, Dr. Melissa Martinez, she's the Associate Professor of Psychiatry at the UT Health San Antonio. Bo Gilliam is a Community Coordinator at Haven for Hope. Also with us is Melissa Tijerina, Vice President for Child Behavioral Health at the Center for Healthcare Services. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. Thanks for tuning us in.